The Writer's Toolkit is published by Nick Hearn Books. Order direct from the publisher and get 20% off this and other great titles. Visit nickhearnbooks.co.uk. This is the Writer's Toolkit podcast.
Welcome to the podcast where we're getting grim with the organisers of Grimfest, a horror-themed festival at London's Old Red Lion Theatre. Grimfest is a month-long celebration of the macabre, featuring an eclectic mix of drama, cabaret, stand-up and more. Running throughout October, it promises a spine-chilling lineup that horror enthusiasts will not want to miss. And in this episode, I'm joined by organisers Nina Atesh and Jack Robertson, the theatre's artistic director, who talks about the various opportunities at the Old Red Lion for writers to bring their work to the stage. It's fitting to touch on some of the rich history of the Old Red Lion before we kick off, being one of London's oldest and most loved pub theatres, having first opened its doors in 1979. This iconic venue has been home to some exceptional theatre throughout its history. Abby Morgan, Joe Penhall, Penelope Skinner and Nina Raine are just a few of the esteemed artists who've had their early work presented on its stage. Writer and director Kathy Burke's first play, Mr. Thomas, premiered there in 1990, starring Ray Winston, and acclaimed director Stephen Daldry staged Uden van Hovaart's play Judgment Day in 1989. The theatre is also renowned for being the original home of Mischief Theatre's The Play That Goes Wrong, which of course went on to achieve tremendous success, transferring to the West End and Broadway. One really interesting fact, I think, is that the theatre hosted the world premiere of Arthur Miller's very first play, No Villain. Written during his college spring break in 1936, the play was rediscovered by British theatre director Sean Turner and received a world premiere almost 80 years later at the Old Red Lion in 2015, transferring to the West End the following year.
The Writer's Toolkit Podcast with Paul Kalbergi.
Jack Robertson is a performer, producer, and playwright with a master's degree in playwriting. His artistic journey spans award-winning sketch comedy, the creation of murder mysteries, and even work as a Shakespearean tour guide. And today, Jack is the artistic director of the Old Red Lion Theatre. In 2019, he founded Medium Rare Productions, whose first play, Butterfly Powder, a very modern play, won Best Comedy Play at the Greater Manchester Fringe Festival. A big fan of the camp classics of British horror cinema, Jack often plays homage to them in his work, and he's also the co-creator of the podcast One from the Vaults with The Cinema Society, which explores the lost horror movies from the Anvil Studios. And with a natural passion for the macabre, it's easy to see why Jack was inspired to create Grimfest. Nina Atesh is a playwright, producer and actor. She studied film and media at Brighton University and honed her acting skills at the Identity School of Acting. Nina is equally passionate about the horror genre, with a particular interest in chilling psychological horrors rich in atmosphere and explored from a female perspective. And through her company Pitha Productions, she produces Grimfest alongside Jack. After performing in various productions on the Fringe, Nina wrote her first play, The Drought, which debuted at the King's Head Theatre in 2021 and scooped an award from the London Horror Festival. The play also featured in Grimfest's inaugural lineup.
Coming up.
The Old Red Lion is a fantastic venue for horror. It's a little bit of a creepy feeling to it. It's got a very kind of spooky atmosphere.
It's a specifically odd space as well. Like, the seating is arranged quite strangely. They kind of remind me of church pews as well. There's lots of doors sort of coming in and off stage. There's like three different doors. So it makes for really good, you know, if you want to be quite creative with your set. It's just a strange, odd space. Yeah, so it's great for this kind of genre.
Well, it's known for being haunted. The landlord will definitely tell you that he's got some creepy stories up his sleeve.
The Writer's Toolkit Podcast.
Hey Jack. Hi Nina.
Hi Paul.
Hello.
All right, let's start at the beginning. Maybe you could tell us about the origins of the festival and why you created it.
I've been doing a few different things with the Old Red Lion Theatre, who I had previously worked in, and I actually had appeared in a show that we did at the London Horror Festival, which was ran for about 10 years or so. At the Old Red Lion and other venues around London.
Okay.
And it was a fantastic festival which spread out over different venues for a number of years, where people came from all over to do horror theatre. And it was fantastic, and I really enjoyed doing that. And the Old Red Lion is a fantastic venue for horror. It's a little bit of a creepy feeling to it. It's got a very kind of spooky atmosphere. And Helen, who was running the theatre at the time, this would have been 2022, I think. She'd had a show booked in for about 3 weeks around the Halloween period, and then that company sadly had to pull out. And she contacted me and said, do you think we could do a little festival of lots of different shows instead to try and make sure there's something on in the theatre over that Halloween period? And I said, yeah, of course, I'm sure. And yeah, sure enough, with a bit of a call out on the right channels, lots of people came forward and said, yeah, including Nina. And that's kind of how we met. Nina had a show on and she wanted to bring it to the festival. And it was a fantastic show set at the bottom of the ocean. And it was great. Yeah, it just all of a sudden you just see there's so many people out there with these different approaches to creepy or horror theatre. I sort of called it Grimfest as a way of differentiating it from the London Horror Festival, which is still currently on hiatus.
Okay. Where was that? Where was the London Horror Festival?
Well, it was all over the place because they ran for a few different years. So I think they definitely did a few years at the Old Red Lion. That's where I first got involved with them.
Okay.
But then we went and did them, I think, 2021, and they were doing it at, like, for example, the Pleasance Theatre in London as well. And I know they did places like The Space.
Right.
And so they were all over the place. Yeah, there's lots of different venues and it was really great. But when that kind of paused, I think we sort of were desperate to maybe fill that gap and make sure we had a continuous sort of celebration. And yeah, like I said, we opened it up a little bit to not just like what might feel specifically horror, but anything that kind of vaguely ties in with the theme of grim sort of darkness.
So
it obviously includes maybe things that are a little bit further out. So it's a bit more of a umbrella term, possibly try and expand what it means to be grim.
Definitely. Where do you think this association with horror and the Old Red Lion came from? Is there any kind of history to hang anything on there?
Well, it's known for being haunted. The landlord will definitely tell you that he's got some creepy stories up his sleeve. And Katie, who used to run the London Horror Festival, has definitely had some spooky experiences from what I've heard regarding it. But when you go into the build, if you go into that building, it's, you know, 1899, I think it got rebuilt, but there was a pub there since about 1415. So it's had a lot of history behind it. And if you go up the stairs and you go into the theatre, I think you definitely get the sense that it's a kind of...
You're not alone.
Yeah, a little bit creepy about it. I mean, there's something creepy about all theatres, but it's got a nice kind of atmosphere. You can only really experience it when you're there, I suppose.
It's a specifically odd space as well. Like the seating is arranged quite strangely. The seating is, they kind of remind me of church pews as well.
Okay.
And it's kind of at an angle and there's lots of doors like sort of coming in and off stage. There's like three different doors. So it makes for really good, you know, if you want to be quite creative with your set. It's just a strange, odd space. Yeah. So it's great for this kind of genre.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why do you think festivals like Grimfest are important platforms for writers and for new writing?
I think for me as a fairly new writer, it just gives you an opportunity financially, really, to do the show. I mean, and it's so difficult to get your stuff on stage now if you're a new writer. And I think festivals just give you the chance without that kind of pressure of doing a really long run, doing like a 3 week or 2 week run. It doesn't give you the financial pressure. You can try something quite new as well. I mean, festivals is where I think, you know, for me is where I sort of started out, not just only as a writer, but as a performer as well.
Yeah.
So it just gives you the space and the opportunity to try something that maybe you're not too sure about, but without having the financial pressure of it as well.
Definitely, definitely. So how easy is it for a writer to kind of go it alone and get something on stage at Grimfest? Do you need to be part of a company per se? Can a writer get something off the ground off their own back entirely?
So, you can apply to the festival as a writer with an idea. You don't have to have necessarily proven yourself. We do ask for like script samples so we can have a little read of your work. But once you get accepted, yeah, you would essentially have to kind of put that show together yourself. If you're not sure about that, we have had in the past, definitely last year, we had a couple of scratch nights where you could have brought like an extract of your piece forward and we would have found you some actors and put it on as part of this multi-scene evening. And then the idea was to try and network, yeah, because I think it's difficult when you're coming purely from a writing perspective.
Sure.
I think myself and Nina, like we say, also have done performance. So we also are kind of used to doing a little bit of that, maybe coming performer first and then going into writing. So we maybe have maybe more of a connection to other performers, and we can just simply reach out to other people that we already know to kind of come and do our work and beg them and plead with them and say, please do this, I wrote it for you. Whereas I think if you are purely writing, like I did a writing course, I did a writing master's degree, and I spoke to some of the people on that course, and I felt like, you know, you speak to them and they've come purely from writing. Maybe they were literary and they wanted to write for theatre, and they've come from that angle, and they don't know writers. They haven't necessarily been involved in productions from behind the scenes. So I think that does put them at a slight disadvantage, or makes them feel on the outside. So if we can do anything to break down those barriers, and I say this a lot with writers, you try to think about what it feels like to be the actor on the stage saying these words, speak out loud, try performing your own scripts, and then see, basically make those connections. So yeah, trying to break down the barriers, trying to do events like scratch nights or other things that can help you network with writers, with actors if you're a writer. And directors, of course. It's quite hard sometimes to find directors. And hardest of all is finding the producer.
Yeah.
Which is why I think we end up, they're like, definitely Nina and myself have definitely just gone, right, well, we'll have to produce this. Right. And then you learn sort of on the job how to do that. And it takes a couple of bad, dodgy, difficult, stressful periods. But you learn a lot at doing it. And yeah, having a connection, having friends who'll perform, it's about trying to make the most of your resources and being able to fail without worrying too much, which is like Nina said, having a festival where it's a shorter run, maybe two or three nights. It's like a micro version of putting on a run.
Yeah.
And you sort of build your way up that way.
Yeah.
Build up your tolerance, so to speak.
Yeah. definitely. I think the scratch nights are a great idea in that sense, because literally the only barrier there is a script, right?
Yeah. You know,
there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
So this will be the third year for Grimfest, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, year three.
And how has the festival grown and evolved over time in terms of, I guess, the variety of kind of work that you're seeing, the number of acts that you're programming each year? Has it been growing year on year?
I mean, definitely. I feel like it has. Yeah, I feel like it's now we've done our lineup now and we've got it all going and we've done our program. And I still have people coming to me saying, oh, I wanted to put something in. So you know that there's going to be kind of more traction next year, and it just kind of grows and grows. And at the end of last year or the beginning of this year, people were saying, oh, so, you know, is Grimfest happening next year? So it's already got this kind of word of mouth and spread. And because it's kind of a bit of a niche genre.
Yes.
And it's that time of year as well. It just, I mean, this year is, I think we're doing it for the month this year. So it's the biggest one we've done yet. And we didn't have any problem with, you know, sort of programming and stuff. We had more than enough shows to fill a whole month, which feels kind of nice, because then it means that people are aware of it and aware of the festival and want to be involved.
That's really exciting. And just talk a little bit about how the program works as well, because you double bill each evening. Is that right?
For this one we have, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I can't remember if we did that last year.
Yeah, we definitely did it last year, because I think we had still quite a lot of people. So most nights we'll have like a 7 o'clock show and 8:30 show, which is something we don't often do at like the Old Red Lion, but it works for festivals because most shows will be within an hour's time frame, like any other fringe festival production.
Yeah.
Although some of the shows are a bit longer, so they're maybe going on at the 8:30 slot. Could be like 70 minutes, maybe 75 minutes.
Okay.
But yeah, it's trying really sort of double bill everything. We've even got some shows on like weekends, like 5 o'clock shows, so matinee two. We want to make sure as many people get on the stage as possible. And it's a great way to, when you've got a show, say you're doing a show at 7 o'clock, and then you're inevitably working with a company that you don't know, and they'll be coming in to take over after you. So there's a bit of crossover. You'll get to meet other companies. You'll get to know them very intimately, sharing a very small dressing room backstage. Mm. So yeah, it's also a good way to, you know, meet other companies, essentially. It's nice. We're trying to also do definitely more this year, trying to get everyone to sort of know each other a little bit more again. Mm-hmm. Try and push that networking, because we have got lots of different people coming to us this year. And yeah, like I say, it's gotten bigger in that it's the full month. You know, it's more than 3 weeks. We managed to bring something to the stage every night for 31 days.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's also, we've had a little bit more of a recognition from, say, other festivals as well. We've had some lovely retweets and mentions from the Edinburgh Horror Festival,
right,
who have been much more more established. And there's even been a little bit of crossover. I think we've had a couple of people who are performing at Edinburgh Horror Festival now coming and doing us as well.
Oh, brilliant.
So that's a nice... Yeah, the same way, yeah, we've worked with different fringe festivals going from one to the other. So it's nice that we're kind of becoming part of that landscape of horror theatre celebrations around the country.
Yeah. Can we unpick the logistics a little bit of taking part in a festival? What does it look like in terms of sharing the space and the technical setup, such as the lighting rig? Are you only looking for suitcase shows that are easy to transport, super portable shows in terms of, you know, props and set pieces that can be set up in about 15 minutes?
I mean, from my personal experience, I would recommend having as small a set as possible. Maybe have like your big kind of statement piece, but you are going to have that quick turnaround, and you are only doing, you know, at the end of the day, you are only doing two or three shows, maybe four at most in a festival. You don't want to spend like a ridiculous amount on set. You don't want to have a really complicated stage management presence. So for me, I would be like, keep it simple. It's at the end of the day, it's all about the work. It's all about the script. It's all about the action that takes place rather than what you're putting on stage. A lot of fringe artists are really used to turning stuff around. In my first show ever, we were on top of another set at the King's Head Theatre, so it was like we had a 15 minute turnaround on and off. So if you have a really good stage manager, or you have a really good technical manager who's also used to stage managing, then you've got no problem. But I think with fringe shows, everyone's kind of used to mucking in. You know, the actors will muck in, the producer will muck in, even the director. You know, it's quite nice because you do kind of become a small family. And like Jack said, you know, we're trying to make it a bit more of a group feeling this year. And you know, so it does feel like a community. It does feel like, you know, this is a festival where everyone is involved. It's not just your show and then you're gone. You know, you can support other people as well. So, you know, like sharing set and stuff can happen as well. Sharing pieces. We have like a few pieces at the Old Red Lion as well that people can use, you know, bits of chairs and tables and stuff. But my advice would always be just keep it as minimal as you can, because really it's the work that's important.
Yeah. And I guess you guys haven't got space backstage to store 20 shows.
No. it's a very, very limited backstage area. But I think especially if you're thinking from a writing perspective, I think I've definitely come across like brand new companies, brand new actors and teams and writers with part of that team who have very sort of set ideas in their head of what their show is going to be. And then realizing that there's a lot of limitations on what they can actually get in terms of a festival. Yeah. And festivals are limiting. But like I say, it's a showcase of the writing talent, the performance talent, and the audiences will forgive any number of like things that aren't, you know, you don't need to have a full room and a working chandelier that collapses onto someone. But yeah, like Neil says, we have got bits and pieces in the theatre, which we're always willing to let people use. And I've seen some very big turnarounds in terms of set pieces, like the whole beds and sofas and all sorts. And you can turn it around within a few minutes. And it's what you would do at, say, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I say this a lot, but I think that scarcity and low budget actually always leads to really clever and inventive ways of doing things, or it just breeds kind of creativity.
Sure.
Your limitations will allow you to think of something crazy that you wouldn't do if you had the money to put in a chandelier, or you had the resources. You would go for that first instinctive idea, but when you can't do it, you'll think about all the alternative things you can do, and sometimes you end up with something much better, or at least something that is really interesting that you weren't expecting, that you wouldn't do if you had the cash or the resources to do it.
Definitely.
And you can play so much with the space as well. Like every fringe theatre is different. Like I said about the Old Red Lion, it's such a weird, quirky space. It's such a strange stage layout. There's three doors at the back that you can use, so you can be really creative with a very minimal set, but a strange stage.
Yeah, so story first then.
Oh yeah.
You also mentioned the lighting rig. Like for festivals like this, we would put a set rig in place, so you would also be beholden to where all the lights have been positioned. So you wouldn't necessarily be able to move the lights, but you could, for example, add different color gels for different lighting states, so you could have everything just green or red or purple. And then we've had people bring in their own lights as well. Like certain companies brought in like T-Bird lighting, so like little lights, so you can have like lights coming in from the side of the action or below. People have brought in smoke machines, like haze machines, which is great, and we can allow for things like that. Some people have just done absolutely nothing, and they brought in just like one little light, and they don't even use the lights in the rig. They will come and do their own spooky little stuff by torchlight. like I say, it's, yeah, whatever you want to do.
Mm. Yeah. And in terms of crewing, everyone brings their own stage manager or technical operator as well?
Yeah, we don't have an in-house technician at the theatre. So yeah, everyone brings their own. But we have some technical freelancers who we often fall back on and suggest to companies, yeah, who have worked there a lot and can understand what it's like to put on a show there. And they're usually really positive about working with different companies and really helpful.
The conversation continues after these messages.
Hey guys, this is Paul. Just to let you know that my dark comedy, Almost the Birthday Party, is playing this October as part of Grimfest.
When a resting actor and his retired partner invite complete strangers to join a play reading group in their parlour, things take an unsettling turn. Roused in the dead of night to recall their fateful first stab at Act One of Pinter's The Birthday Party, hilarity and absurdity unfold. But as elusive pages of the script surface and figures from the troubling tableau demand an encore, Kenny and Vern's innocent quest for friendship spirals into a Pinteresque nightmare.
The show runs from the 17th to the 20th of October at the Old Red Lion Theatre, and you can find the link to tickets and more information in the show notes.
Almost the Birthday Party by Paul Kalbergi.
Welcome back to the Writer's Toolkit podcast.
So, Nina, Jack, what can audiences expect at this year's festival?
A whole array.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we've got some different takes on horror this year, which is what horror is for me. It's all about challenging what the actual genre presents.
Yeah, yeah.
We've definitely got, noted to Nina, we've definitely got a bit more range this year in terms of darker subject matters.
Okay.
We had quite a lot of horror homage and parody almost last year. We had lots of like one-person shows where they were doing great interpretations of classic horror genres and subgenres. Yep. This year, I definitely feel like we've got a bit more on the sort of classic and straightforward horror aspects. We've got some very good classic storytelling productions where they were telling kind of classic ghost stories. But then we've also mixing that with things like kind of comical mime show about a haunted house, which is very unusual, but very, very funny. But also maybe dark thrillers where it's more a sort of human exploration of sort of very dark themes that you wouldn't necessarily maybe say were horror, but are very kind of grim in the story that they're telling. But then again, like I say, some sort of great takes on classics. We've got stuff like Jekyll and Hyde with a kind of comedy twist. Okay. But we've also then got a story about Byron, Lord Byron coming back as a vampire. But then also we've got a little bit of cabaret as well, kind of apocalyptic cabaret.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a real unusual array of stuff, which again, like I think is great. It shows you the breadth and range of the genre and what we want to bring to the theatre. You know, one of the biggest very oddly success stories of like the last couple of years has been a horror play, 222, and that's just you can't kill it keeps coming back and back and back, and it's just it won't stay away, and it's been so successful. And again, that's gone on a bit of a national tour, and I've had friends around the country going, "Oh, have you seen it in London? What's it like? I want to go and see it." And like that hunger, there's definitely, I think horror theatre is very, we said that before, horror theatre is always very commercially viable because people get excited. Yeah. They don't really have to know anything about it. You just
That's
say,
right.
Oh, it's a ghost story. And go, ooh. And they just, and again, that time of year, people are ready for it. And we try and do kind of vaguely, you know, horror-related theatre all year round at the Old Red Lion if we can, because it's a great venue for it. So we definitely had a horror show there at Christmas last year, another ghost storytelling things throughout. So yeah, there's a really interesting mix. Mm. I think there's something for everyone who's got that taste for something dark or unusual.
Mm. Sounds like a really exciting and varied programme there. How many of the artists in this year's Grimfest were you aware of or were known to you before they reached out?
So Jack mentioned about the scratch nights that we did last year. And actually, we've got a couple of artists in this year's programme that did take part in the scratch night. Like the cabaret at the end of the world was someone that did our scratch night. Chris Stagg did our scratch night, which is quite nice because, I don't know, it feels like, you know, that was a helpful hand in, or, you know, they had the feedback that they needed or the network that they needed in order to get the show on into next year's programme, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know a couple of the artists that are coming on, but I think the majority of them are completely new to me, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
So you want to, you know, promote new artists. As a producer, for me, that's what my kind of thing is. I'm all about new writing. I'm all about new writing, especially in this genre. So it's nice to work with artists that you've maybe never heard of before, or you've heard of on the sidelines, that are coming to your festival.
Yeah,
a couple of names that when I saw them crop up and I was like, oh, you've heard of us. That's yeah. Great. And I think some of them may have either maybe done stuff at the Old Red Lion before, but maybe before I was working there, so that's good as well. They've kind of come back, they know that it's a place that this works, this kind of festival works in that venue.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's been fantastic to see some names come up, and some people have contacted us, or they've contacted me maybe about putting on a show at the Old Red Lion and then saying, well, how do I do it? And then I go, oh, this might actually work for Grimfest. And so I've maybe pushed them in that direction, because like I say, it's easier for them to do it as a festival for that kind of slightly more financially less risky option than trying to hire the theatre for a week or 2 weeks. So I've maybe pushed them in that direction. They have come back and said, yeah, I really want to do the festival. So that's also been great to see people wanting to bring that work to it.
It looks like there's a lot going on at the Old Red Lion. So looking beyond Grimfest, could you talk about some of the other opportunities for playwrights to get involved?
Grimfest kind of came off the back of, I did a little thing, again, I think it was 2022, when Vaults Festival was cancelled due to sort of COVID restrictions. And again, the Old Red Lion had, I think, about a 4 week gap in their schedule. I suggested we put on this another kind of mini festival, and sort of, I think a few other venues did a similar thing where they tried to rehouse productions that had lost their spot at Vault Festival. So again, these kind of shorter fringe length shows. So I did that, and it, around that February period of 2022, and we called it Fresh Fest. And I wasn't sure whether we'd do it again, but I thought, oh, why not? Because Grimfest last year was quite well received. Our second Grimfest, I mean, was well received. So I thought, oh, let's have a go. And so for 2024, I decided to open up applications for Fresh Fest,
right,
which we did earlier this year for, I think, 5 weeks. And that has gone down really well. We had, I think, about, 16 to 17 fringe kind of style productions. But also, I also included as part of that play readings. So if you were just purely a writer and you did not have that company, not have a director or producer, you could just purely submit the play. And then our company would sort of help you find actors, find a director, and just do a staged reading. Some of those were on their feet. Some of those were just actors sat in chairs around the stage. And we had about 13 of those, I think, over the 5 week period. Most of them were double bills. Some of them were just standalone. And yeah, that was where we had about 13 writers get to have their work performed from, you know, script in hand sort of style. So that was really good. And I think some of those shows have then maybe gone on to have further development as a direct result.
Yeah,
they were all fantastic, because that's where I think writers got to maybe showcase their writing, probably with plays that maybe wouldn't be suitable to the Old Red Lion, maybe slightly bigger cast or more kind of ambitious, needed bigger stages or needed something else. But great to have them sort of debut at that venue and sort of support that writer. And, you know, we've remained in contact with all those writers, and some of them have come back with other ideas. And so, again, it was great to network with those writers, because I think they wouldn't have been able to necessarily put on their own show, the full-blown show. But this playwriting stage readings allowed them to do something with that script that they've probably been tackling for months and years.
Yeah.
And sort of it's also just to get the feedback maybe from the audience and people to listen to it, and hopefully maybe find some kind of team that might want to actually put it on somewhere else. So that was fantastic. So that was good, the play readings, and definitely going to bring back Fresh Fest for 2025. Play readings and, brand new work. A bit like Grimfest, probably two shows a night, 2 to 4 performances. No genre, it's just anything, but as long as it's new.
Brilliant. And what about the Monologue Club?
Again, that kind of has come about just purely from gap in the calendar. We often have Monday nights available at the theatre, which we would traditionally just allow people to hire out for things like scratch nights, play reading events, one-off performances, sketch comedy, stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very overwhelmed by the response we've had to it. Writers based in London coming to me often saying, I want to perform this monologue that I've written myself.
Okay. I love it.
It's been great, yeah. And the audiences have been really, really positive about it. We've only done just four nights.
Yeah.
We did it across July, and it's gone down so well that I've decided, yeah, we're going to do it in September as well. Then after Grimfest, we'll bring it back, hopefully, again, if it's still got people submitting monologues.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant because those really accessible opportunities like that are so rare, just to kind of get a piece on its feet straight away, hear it in front of an audience.
Yeah.
It's really encouraging for writers who are maybe even working on bigger projects. You know, you're kind of in the trenches for a long time. So to be able to spend more time in the theatre and less time alone at home, getting out, meeting people, seeing stuff on stage, it's endlessly encouraging.
Yeah,
definitely. And it's also, I think we've had a few people come forward with that who are actors as well, who have decided they, you know, it's a bit of a dip in the toe into writing.
Yeah.
And again, it's kind of a fairly risk-free or supportive way of performing your own work, which I always encourage people to do if they have that idea in the back of their head, they want to write something maybe for themselves, to go ahead and do it. Because it's a really great setting for it. It's very supportive, very warm and receptive. Just give it a go.
There's nothing to lose.
No one's going to throw anything at you. Yeah. No one's going to black bar you or, like, you know, disband you or go, no, never darken our doors again. That won't happen.
Nina, why do you believe pub theatres play such an important role in the broader theatre landscape in London, especially when it comes to getting new work on stage?
I just think it's the backbone of new work. There's so few opportunities to get your work on stage. And when I say on stage, I mean, you know, like the Royal Court or, you know, those bigger theatres that are more, I say, established with, you know, quotes. But if you want to try out new work with a very risk-free venture, then pub theatres are just so important for it. And if you're, you know, a working class writer or, you know, you don't have the backing or the money, and like funding is so difficult right now. Funding is near on impossible to get. And if you don't have funding, very few theatres will put on your show because very few theatres will produce your work. So you have to have an outside producer. So I think pub theatres just give you the advantage to try new work and to just have the experience of actually doing theatre. Like I said, my background is performance. I always wanted to write. I always wanted to be a writer since like the age of five. So I knew I was always going to, that was the road I was going to go into. And Jack mentioned the London Horror Festival, which was what kind of was around before Grimfest kind of filled that void.
Yeah.
And my first play was a reading at the London Horror Festival. And from that, it went on to the King's Head Theatre, which was then a pub theatre before it became the theatre it is now. And then it went to the Old Red Lion. So for me, it was like, I never would have kind of had that opportunity had it not been for that fringe festival or those kind of pub fringe theatres. So I just, I learned so much from it. And, you know, we were talking about finding producers as well, which is really difficult. I never had any intention to be a producer. I just couldn't find one. It was impossible to get one, to have my work on stage. And I just thought to myself, if I ever want this to happen, I'm going to have to produce myself. So it was all a learning curve. And had it not been for pub theatres and the fringe theatre, I never would have been able to have done that. I never would have been able to have become the producer that I am now. So I just think they're just so important. And I think it would be nice if more people knew about them. I think they're much more common in the city and in London. You know, I'm from Kent originally, and they're not very well known down there. There's no pub theatres really in Kent from where I'm from. There's, you know, fringe theatres in Brighton and Manchester, Buxton, Edinburgh, of course. But it would be nice if they were outside of the cities as well, because when my friends come over up to London from Kent, they're like, oh, this is so cool. You know, you've got a pub under a theatre. Like, what more could you want?
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to have that opportunity as well for writers that don't necessarily live in London or can't afford to live in a city like London or Edinburgh, to have that opportunity for pub theatres to be more of a thing outside of London and Edinburgh and Manchester and things like that. But
yeah, definitely. Because there's something magical about pub theatres, isn't there?
Oh, 100%. And like, about the cost as well, like so many, it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the West End, of course I do, but it's just so expensive now to go and see a show. And I see some fringe shows that have, if not better production values than some West End shows that I see, and they're like a fraction of the price. And like some of the stuff I saw in Edinburgh last year was just incredible, and the writing was brilliant and the performances. And it would just be so nice if people went out of their way to see pub theatre shows as much as they do to see West End shows.
Yeah. And to also, I think, to value pub theatre in that same way as well, you know, to think, I can go to a pub theatre and see, you know, a really good show, a, you know, quality piece of writing with, you know, really good acting put together really well. Mm. The budget may not be there, but very often the quality is. And like you say, it's a great place to find untapped talent, to, yeah. you know, to see something maybe at early stages as well in development that could go on to be something fantastic. Look at yeah. you know, the Mischief plays that came from Old Red Lion, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Again, just give it a go. And like you say, I think the most interesting little ideas and risk-taking things are going to be in those venues, which can do it at an affordable price. I think it's also, you're trying to just kind of convince audiences to take that risk as well, because they're not sure about spending their money. That's why the West End theatres are these reliable properties that they know people already know they like. So we're asking everyone to take a big risk on things. Mm. Like the Mischief Theatre, they can go on to big, very big things.
Absolutely.
So what's the best way for writers to kind of start a conversation with you and get in touch?
So you can always contact me at productions.medium.rare@gmail.com. I'm more likely to look at my emails than things like, say, Instagram. I'm not very good at social media particularly. But also you can contact us through the maybe ORL Theatre on Twitter. You can maybe go through that way. But yeah, I think email is the best way to get hold of me, for example, with any questions and ideas, and I will do my absolute best to get back to you at some point. Yeah, we'll try my hardest to get back to everyone.
And too late, I guess, for anyone to get involved in being part of Grimfest this year as a company on stage or whatever, but not too late definitely to kind of, you know, get tickets and come along and maybe be inspired for next year.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. We're going to have a launch party on the 1st of October. So that's open to anyone, and there'll probably be a performance on of some kind that night with a bit of a medley of shows that are coming up that year and maybe some other artists who are not taking part. So yeah, maybe if you want to get involved, come along into the launch party, make yourselves known to us, get chatting to us. We might hold a couple of other events. We've talked about things like a horror pub quiz,
yeah,
which we've done in the past. So we might have some other little events going on, and maybe some more scratch nights, actually, potentially, before the festival begins.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you've got anything like that, definitely contact us. Follow Grimfest on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, if you're in London, if you've got that opportunity, yeah, come and speak to us. Or if you're not from London, just email us.
Yeah.
Or make a little trip down to see some of the shows.
Come along and support.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, then, well, give us a reminder. Where are you located? How can people find tickets for Grimfest? All that information.
So we are the Old Red Lion in Angel, about a 2-minute walk away from Angel Station. You can find tickets on the Old Red Lion website. And like I said, follow Grimfest UK on Twitter and Instagram, and you'll see all of our lineup and lots of promotion about all of the shows.
Yeah.
And you can also go on the Pither Productions website, where there'll be more information about Grimfest and stuff like that as well.
Ooh.
Brilliant. Nina, Jack, thank you. There's lots for writers to take away there, I think, whether considering Grimfest for next year, writing or submitting some work, or exploring some of the other new writing platforms at the Old Red Lion. There's plenty to be inspired by. So thank you both so much for your time.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
The Writers Toolkit Podcast.
Thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed finding out more about Grimfest and opportunities for new writing at the Old Red Lion Theatre. If you enjoyed the episode and the season, please do consider leaving a review or a star rating if you're listening on Spotify, and do share the show with fellow writers. Your support helps me to continue bringing insightful conversations to the community. Until next time, keep writing, keep creating, and of course, stay inspired.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Writers Toolkit Podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to leave a review and share the link with your friends. This podcast is fueled by Ko-fi. If you'd like to support the show, you'll find the Buy Me a Ko-fi link in the show notes.